were shot and collapsed. Then another South African man seen him and picked him up and was running with him. And a journalist, a South African indigenous journalist, snapped a picture of it, of this man carrying Hector Peterson. And the man ran with him to get him to medical attention to see if they could save his life. But Hector Peterson died. And our guide said, the man, he said, first off, he says, a journalist showed the photo to the editor of the newspaper, who was a white South African. And he had a story with a photo. And he was told, you have a choice to make. Because if we print the story and show the photo, your name is on there. You'll more likely be killed. Or we can just leave it, not put it in. But the man said, no, put it in. And he left South Africa. He returned when Nelson Mandela was freed. And also for the young man that picked up Hector Peterson, he too left and never come back to South Africa. I was listening to our tour guide talk about this demonstration. And it's a sadness overcome me. Because he says 170 students were killed. Not just Hector Peterson. You know, when you hear the, when I hear those things about adults opening fire on students, can't help but be shook. I was standing there and I was traumatized by these images. And our tour guide comes up to me and standing there, and misty-eyed. He says, are you okay? And I told him, you know this? I don't know how people can do this. And he says, where are you from? I said, Canada. And I said to him, the apartheid system come from Canada. We have reservations there too, just like townships. We're segregated too. I said, how could people harm children and youth in this way? And I told him, in Canada, at the residential schools, we're segregated, we're in school away from Canada. And I told him there's 38,000 registered cases of sexual, physical abuse in a residential school. And I was very emotional. And he's standing there, puts his hand on my shoulder, and he says, I understand. And that comforted me, helped me to become resilient again. They're saying that, like I was saying, 700 youth killed, demonstrating. So it was a powerful trip, journey to go see the homelands of one of my heroes, Nelson. It was, I'm so glad I went, because I hear about Nelson. We're with a little group of people, and my wife asked, why do you guys follow Nelson? Or what make you love Nelson? And his grandmother says, we all loved Nelson. We believed every word he said. And I said to myself, you know, that's got to be true. Because he spent 27 years in prison and come out with his beliefs intact. And of course, I say to myself, is there a leader that I believe every word they say? In indigenous leadership, there was one leader that I knew. He's passed now. I believed every word he said. We're doing direct action in Mar territory. He is telling me he went to gas up his truck and he was by himself. And he says, I went. And all of a sudden, Jerry, these vehicles come screeching up to the gas station and out jumps these white men. And they surround me. He says, I put the gas nozzle back on the pump. And I intertwine my fingers and push them out. He looks at them. And he says, I'm prepared to die for what I believe in. Are any of you? Come on. And he said, they left. They could see the commitment. And they believed every word he said. And they left him. Nelson said the same things, that he's prepared to die for his beliefs. You know, I heard Nelson in movies and news clips, and I believe him. He would say, I have flaws, I'm a flawed man. He's the first man I hear say that. Because many of my heroes, people would say they were something shady about him, you know. I say yes. But the commitment and the resilience of Nelson Mandela is a lesson for all of us. Because his wish for equality for everyone in South Africa, for democracy, that everybody can participate, was so strong in him. You know, and we're in Soweto. It's the only place in the world where there's two recipients, you know, the Nobel Prize for Peace, Nelson Mandela and Tutu. That's how out there they were, I guess. They let people know. Now, like when I come back from South Africa, I started working right away. And, I was at University of British Columbia. And I was in this classroom and they had the air conditioning cranked. And I'm a wuss when it comes to air conditioning. I get chilled. But I got so chilled my teeth were chattering. And I told one of the faculty, said, I have to leave. And he says, how come? I said, I'm getting chilled. Need to go to the room and cover up with blankets. So I did. And my wife phones, and, are you okay? I said, oh, I got chilled. I'm in bed now. Oh. She says, you go up to Emerge at UBC. Get yourself checked up because you might have picked something up in South Africa. Okay. So I went up to the Emerge. Told them where I'd been. Told them I had my vaccination records and everything. And told them, you know, I got chilled. And I had a high fever and I got there and I had a headache. So they're thinking different things. I don't know, malaria, whatever, from South Africa. So I'm an Emerge. You know how there's an Emerge, they got these curtain things around you and I was laying there. And they come and take my blood, take my temperature, you know. And, you know, doing their job. They come and said, we have one more test we want to do. And it might be uncomfortable. We're going to take some fluid from your spine. I said, oh, okay, you know. So they done that. They said, we're going to have to wait, you know, for the results. I said, okay. So I was laying there, and it's probably around 4 o'clock in the afternoon when they done the spinal thing. 2 hours later, 6 o'clock, you know, and still nothing. I'm wondering if I'm going to be here all night. 6:30 comes along, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm fed up with this, you know. And then I said to myself, out of the blue, I said, if Nelson can spend 27 years in prison, you can spend a day or a night in ICU, Jerry. Such a small comparison to what he'd done. But they come at 7 o'clock and say, no, you're clear. You can go. But just take it easy. If something comes up, you get headaches and fever, you come back again. I said, okay. And I left. So we all need to put our minds together to see what we can do for the children. After talking to you on this podcast called Resilience, we must persevere now for the children, their children, and their children's children. And follow these leaders that had perseverance. And work together. You know, and we're in Johannesburg at the airport. One of the things I noticed that I felt so comfortable there was because the indigenous South Africans were like indigenous people. They are indigenous people, but like at home, First Nations. They have a sense of humor. We're in Johannesburg and we're struggling with our luggage and this and man comes up and he says, I'll get you a cart. My wife goes with him and he gets a cart for her, you know, to load the suitcases on. And he says, I'm sorry, ma'am. He says, it has no engine. And he laughs, you know. Then I was pushing the suitcases. My wife had gone to get something. And this man comes up to me. And he says, my king, can I be of help to you? You know, and I looked at this indigenous South African, and he's got this wonderful smile, even his eyes are smiling. And I wanted to give him a tip just for saying my king, you know. It felt so good. And I know that I don't have the big picture. I didn't live in their communities. But what I see and hear from the ones in public, I felt comfortable. There's not too many places in the world I felt that. The other place was in St. Kitts in the Caribbean. A lot of Rasta people. You know, they come, these people from Africa. They could see I was indigenous and they want to talk to me and they want to be with me. You know, and I just felt so... It's an inclusive feeling. And they were vibrant, too. Just like the ones in South Africa. Like in Soweto. We're going down the street. We're going to go find a restaurant to eat. And we come across these street performance. And their drums and singing. And they have regalia on. And we stop and I watch. And they finished the song and I went over and talked to them. Told them, it's so good to see you and to hear you. I love your music. And they had me sit down with them and they had people taking pictures of me and them from their group. And then they sing again and I'm keeping time with them. And they were so, they looked healthy to me. You know, and so warm. Yes. We went to Nelson's house in Soweto. And there's places where there's bullet holes in his house. We seen the small house he lived in. That's where I seen the only neighborhood in the world with two Nobel Peace Prize winners. So of all my role models and teachers, I got to go to Nelson's house, walk the streets where Nelson walked, walk in the prison he was in. And I would flash to his pictures. And times I seen him in newsreels and things, and his gentleness and his demeanor of dignity. It just multiplied for me in South Africa. It was a good trip, because I learned about perseverance there. And I heard about the townships and the poverty there. Then to see people, they wrote their constitution. One of their pillars was reconciliation. Big lesson on forgiveness. After I seen how they were treated in the prisons. Locked out of the economy too. And they still talk reconciliation. That's real perseverance to me. Real. You know, like that thought of, they just don't talk about it. They do something. There was individuals there that were working hard to bring equality and democracy to South Africa. One of the thoughts I had was, because when I was there, we'd hear about troubles with the politics in South Africa. And I said, maybe one of the mistakes. I said, I don't know, but this is just my thought. One of the mistakes was that they turned to the model that they were living under. Because they called it, they, you know, all over the world, they say where they elect leaders that there's democracy. And I was saying to myself, perhaps they should have followed their tribal ways. And that's what I say about us in Canada, too, as Indigenous people. We should go back to our laws, our ways of life. Because this democracy of electing chief and council in our communities hasn't been working for us. It's proven by the poverty, the health problems, the social problems in our communities, that perhaps we should go back to our way that worked for thousands of years. I don't know if that's possible, but that's my dream, that we go back to that as a people, and we'd have resilience and perseverance. Because, and I think about it, we had our Nelson Mandelas, our Shays, to his Indigenous people. All those ones that refused to let the language die. Our role models and teachers. The ones that refused to let the food sovereignty go. Learn how to harvest our food the way we did. Dry the salmon and the deer meat. Those were resilient ones. The ones that maintained ceremony and rituals might be small in number, but they're there. The music, traditional music, the medicines, they're there. So I believe we need to go back to that. That's one man, that's Sahilthis belief, Sahilthis thinking. That we have resilience. We can recover after trauma. Healing is possible for all of us. And to become original human beings the way we were born as babies, pure. And to think about the people, think about Mother Earth. When I seen those ones working in they call them parks in South Africa, where they want to maintain a life for those animals, birds, all the creatures. They were real stewards, those people working there. You know, so I hear talk of sovereignty with some indigenous people. Being sovereign means you have a territory and you make laws over that territory and you enforce them. You have authority and jurisdiction. So our authority and jurisdiction was for the people, for the land. And I believe that's where we need to go. And work together. Be one. So that's my podcast about resilience and perseverance. I'm so blessed to be able to travel to South Africa after COVID. And to walk like I was saying where Nelson walked. Tutu. All those other ones, because they didn't do it by themselves. Nelson didn't do it by himself. He had others think like him, believe him. They believe in each other and they move together. So let's... I guess we could all go to that place where people believe every word we say. Take self-discipline, commitment, healing, to heal ourselves. Heal myself. So, so that's my podcast, you know, about resilience and perseverance. So let's persevere in doing what we can for this country we live in, this beautiful land that is suffering now, droughts and floods and change of temperature, all of that. Let's put our minds together and see what we can do for Mother Earth. Because she does mother all of us, feeds us, protects us. So, you have a wonderful time with your family and your friends. And that's the role model. Resilience and perseverance for all of our children.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When fire rages across a landscape, wood can go up in flames, but dirt does not burn. So some people are drawing inspiration from age-old earthen building methods to help create more fire-resilient homes.
The blocks that I make are considered unfired earthen masonry, and we have been using this material for over 10,000 years.
That's Lisa Mori, owner and founder of a company called Nova Terra. She says much of the world continues to build with earth, but it's rare for new buildings in the United States, so she's trying to change that. Her company manufactures compressed earthen bricks called EcoBlocks. They're made from sand and clay mixed with lime for additional strength and water protection. The blocks themselves cannot burn.
So for wildfires that we're seeing, of course, more often now, the walls provide a lot better resistance.
She says homes built with EcoBlocks can also be more energy efficient, and creating the blocks themselves uses minimal energy and fuel. So this modern take on an ancient building method can create homes that are better for the climate and less vulnerable to some of the impacts of a warming world. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Thank you.